Welcome to MGO Podcast 8.11, which is located somewhere around midfield. We're not exactly sure where. So midway through the fourth quarter, the heavens opened up and dumped the most benign weather I can remember in the history of Michigan Stadium. It was gorgeous.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
It was crazy.
Yeah.
And Michigan, of course, has pulled ahead at this point, so I don't like just hate life and all things under the sun, as it were. And it's you get the snow angels afterwards. You get like Devin Asiasi tweeting out that he fell in love with snow, and I'm like, yeah, that was the most benign way for all recruits and Californians to be introduced to snow.
Yes. If it's going to happen, happen like that.
Yeah, it's not always that great.
No.
But sometimes it is great.
Yeah, it was nice to have Indiana 2016 as opposed to, say, Northwestern 2008.
Yep. Yeah, it was too cold to tweet, but it wasn't so cold that at halftime I went up and tried to warm my hands on the pretzel machine.
I was going to ask whether that happened.
No, it was mildly bad, but not really. Like when you start walking after the game, you're like, oh, my feet are numb. I didn't know that. but other than that, it was fine.
Good.
How was lunch in the press box?
It was all right.
All right. did they have prime rib this time?
No, they did not.
They did not. Did they ever have prime rib?
No.
No. What do they have?
It was just like sausages.
Sausages? Sounds pretty good.
Wasn't bad.
Diva.
You got me this credential, man.
Yeah.
I'm just doing my job.
Just doing your job. We'd like to thank our sponsors, The Bow Store, Underground Printing, Mo Sports Shop, the Alumni Association of the University of Michigan, the Residence Inn, Ann Arbor Downtown, Homeshore Lending, Deo Bookkeeping, I'll get it right one of these days, Michigan Law Grad, Defensive Drivers Group, Ann Arbor Elder Law, and Peak Wealth Management. Let us start with the hot topic, as it were. I don't know why it would be a hot topic. It is a hot, but not like, you know, piercings and
no.
Very professional podcast. John O'Korn. Passes for 59 yards in this game.
On 16 attempts.
Yeah, not great. Does have the one scramble that kind of presages a couple of Devion Smith runs that we'll get to. But looked bad.
Yeah.
So a couple of things stood out to me in this game. One, the Madden drop back that he had on the crossing route to Amara Darbo, where, you know, he throws it 20 yards and you're like, all right. We got a first down, and then you're like, wait, he's still 5 yards behind the line, the game. And he has to make a move. He does make a move, and I was just like, that's why you don't Madden drop back.
Yeah, he had another one earlier where Jay Chesson is a check down option within 5 yards of the line of scrimmage, and O'Korn has dropped so far back that he can't get the ball to him.
Yeah, I remember that one, too. Yeah, he was probably 20 to 25 yards behind the line of scrimmage.
Yep.
So that's not ideal. And then on the play where he actually ended up getting a late hit, that was a waggle rollout on which Henry Poggi was the fullback option. And this is like the dead simplest throw that you can have as a quarterback. It's a fullback. He's like at the line of scrimmage and he's probably 3 or 4 steps past the defender who's supposed to be checking him. I'm just like, all right, well, he's going to throw it to the fullback and we're going to get in third and short. Let's go. And then he doesn't pull the trigger.
But he made a play by getting hit late.
So, to me, this is a guy who is just completely overwhelmed to the point where he's just lost his mind. And you can see that with the pocket awareness and stuff, like the difference between what we saw from Wilton Spate most of this year and what we saw from John O'Korn in this game was stark.
Yes.
And on the scramble, you know, the thing that made that play is that he went up in the pocket. Like he's not bailing out deep. He's anticipating the fact that these guys are going to overrun the play, he moves up in the pocket, and then he can go run for 30 yards.
Yes. No, that was his best play of the whole game, by a lot.
Yes. We were wrong about Wilton Spate's injury, but at least we didn't say that O'Korn was bawling out in practice. Like rivals did. Bawling out. How do we feel about the game if we don't get Wilton Spate back next week?
How do you feel about Brandon Peters getting his red shirt pulled?
Oh, man. I don't think that's going to help. I do. I do think it's going to help.
I think that might help.
But it's not, I mean, it's not going to happen.
No.
I think the more realistic thing is, like, I mean, do you look at Shane Morris?
Whew.
I mean, this is, I mean.
I mean, I think it says something that Morris didn't get a look at all in this game.
Well, either. I think it also says something that we didn't see Wilton Spate at all.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, by.
Oh, he's hurt. I mean, you could
tell.
Well, I mean,
he's obviously hurt, but the extent of his injury and his ability to play, I feel like if he was likely to play against Ohio State, they would have brought him in at some point in the third quarter. That's what I think. But we'll see. I mean,
yeah, I mean, the season's on the line there. If he's remotely good enough to play, you think he ends up getting put in when you realize that O'Korn is just not really capable of moving the ball through the air at all. And instead, they stuck with it.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we have nothing to talk about in terms of, like, receivers because they didn't get to do anything.
Amara Darbo made a man miss. That was nice.
Yeah, well, and he actually got a couple of really good blocks on the two long Smith runs.
He
so
did.
There's that.
Kakoa Crawford had another really nice block downfield on the second Smith touchdown, too.
Yeah, so this was a game where the wide receivers blocking was pretty much the only thing. I mean, Darbo got overthrown on a deep ball, which is actually probably O'Korn's best throw of the night. I mean, it was close, and with the wind, you can see how that would have been an accurate throw that got pushed long.
Yeah,
so maybe they can do that. I mean, I was momentarily frustrated by the game plan when Indiana was going on their crazy drive, which is all ludicrous downfield catches.
Yep.
Because I was just like, well, you know, if we punt it up to Darbo, is he not going to make at least one of those catches? I mean, you'd think, given his history, that if you just put it up there, that, you know, there's going to be some profit there.
Yeah.
So entering this game, Indiana is a top 20 rush defense to S&P Plus, which I thought was a little bit phony. I mean, it's a number, right? So it's not phony, but, you know, I thought Michigan would do better than you might otherwise expect.
Yes.
And they did so, mostly with Devion Smith going ham on the fishing village.
Yeah, my goodness. I mean, he set the tone early with that just trucking of the safety where either his mouth guard or a tooth popped out.
Or as Brian Mack said, it was his soul. So,
which, I mean, it might have been all three.
Yeah. So that was on fourth and short or whatever. Michigan gets a field goal out of that drive, and then the two touchdowns he gets. The first one was something I've been hoping that we're going to see, and that is Michigan aligns in a very pitch sweep formation.
Yes, and then doesn't run the pitch sweep.
Yeah, and they run it to the inside. Smith has a huge cutback lane, and then gets a great block from Amara Darbo.
Makes two really nice cuts on that one too.
Yeah, and just. That was a quintessential example of adding a bunch of gaps, and then the defense is thinking about defending the wrong gaps, and so that was encouraging both from a we're not losing to Indiana anymore standpoint, and from a game theory, game plan standpoint.
Yeah, pretty nice pylon dive too.
Yeah, very very spectacular. So, and then he has the final run, which was actually pretty easy. I don't know what happened.
There was a truck lane there.
Yeah, there's a truck lane, and you know, he comes around the corner, and he's got two lead blockers, and they block one guy, because that's the only guy.
Yep.
Like, usually I'm like, oh, why are you blocking the one guy? But there was nobody else to block. So that's what they did.
Yeah. And then Crawford takes out a couple guys downfield, and that's all she wrote.
And Smith's able to run through a tackle attempt because of the Crawford block. And yeah, that one was that was a bust by Indiana.
Yeah, that was classic Indiana defense.
I will
right
confidently
there.
Assert that was a bust by Indiana. But John Dewar, who is a former walk-on in the program, has been doing a bunch of useful analysis on Twitter the day after the game. He's JDew51.
Yes.
Good follow. But he pointed out that Ty Wheatley had a couple of really good blocks in this game, and this was probably his best performance as a blocker in a Michigan helmet. And, you know, this kind of goes back to what I was talking about in the game preview, is if you can load up fullbacks and tight ends on this defense and get to the second level and get to their undersized guys and put a hat on them, they will move and Michigan will be able to run the ball.
Yeah, and Michigan definitely, I mean, they just started loading up and that was clearly the way to go, I think, as that game went on.
I mean, the big formations were, I mean, Michigan had like a, they had a 4-minute offense drive that lasted 7 minutes.
Yeah.
And that was because that this was a good matchup for them and a bad matchup for Indiana. If you look at how they've done on the ground, they got kind of beat up by a couple of read option teams that even up the numbers, and then they got beat up by Michigan State somewhat. And Michigan State, notwithstanding what happened this weekend, is not a good rushing offense. But they bring the same approach that Michigan does with a bunch of fullbacks and tight ends, and they were able to get almost 5 yards a carry. And I think we saw that Indiana is pretty good at defending teams that spread you out and don't have much of a mobile quarterback, but against this kind of offense, they're still climbing out of a big hole.
Yeah, I mean, they've got some good players, but they are a little undersized, and especially at that linebacker level, and that was something Michigan took advantage of.
And what we didn't see in this game that we saw a lot of against Iowa were mental busts leading to tackles for loss. So they had the one play where they ran the pitch sweep that got overrun, but that was just a great call. It was a corner blitz from Indiana. It wasn't anyone's fault. And then I can't really remember much in the way of tackles for loss until like the very last series Michigan had where it's just snowing and Michigan doesn't care and they're just
they're
just running clock.
Indiana ended up with 8 tackles for loss, but I think a big chunk of those were late.
Yeah, so, yeah.
And Michigan had 12 of their own, so.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, the approach to this game, I think people have, I've seen some Lloyd Ball accusations at various stops on the internet I've made, and I'm like, dude, Lloyd Ball is the way to go when your quarterback can't play.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I saw the suggestion for punting it up to the receivers, which I can kind of get that.
And
there were people calling for Peppers to play like practically full-time quarterback, and it's like,
I
can kind of get that too, but in a game that's that close where he's playing such a big role on special teams and defense, I mean, you got to that guy's got to take a break at some point.
At some point. Maybe.
Yeah.
You don't know that.
But also, do you want to wear him out the week before Ohio State, too?
Yeah. Fine.
I mean, I could get it.
Mm-hmm.
But this was also a game where you put him in a quarterback and Indiana gets to just, first of all, like you said, Indiana's done better against the spread type run games than the more power.
Well, no. Like with a running quarterback, I think that they would be weak. Well, the one time that they did bring in Peppers as a quarterback, he threw the ball. Or was going to throw the ball.
Was going to.
But that was like
everything was covered.
3rd and 8 on a 10.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't
and
think.
They rolled to the short side because he's right-handed. That's and not, it cut that down was, the field. I didn't like that play call.
Yeah, I didn't like that play call either. But, you know, in general, I just, I figured that they were so hamstrung with the fact that they didn't know what their quarterback was going to do if they drop him back, that they approached this game in the way that I would have, except for a couple limited exceptions that we'll talk about in a legitimate special teams and game theory section, which we suddenly have now,
because
there is special teams. There are special teams. But that's pretty much all I have for the offense. It was bad, and the weather and John O'Korn were most of it. And
Davion Smith had over half the team's yards.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yep. Very Akram Wadley.
It was.
All right, I'll take a break, come back, talk about the defense. Did you know the black and white striped referee uniform seen on the field today was created at Moe's? In the early days of football, officials wore white dress shirts, bow ties, and beret-type hats. But when an Arizona quarterback confused Ypsilanti's Lloyd Olds for a player and mistakenly passed him the ball, he asked his friend George J. Moe to make a distinctive shirt to set him apart. The new striped uniform was effective, but hated by fans. Olds was met with plenty of boos from the crowd when he first wore it in 1921, and more when he called targeting. Moe Sports Shop is celebrating 100 years of outfitting the Michigan faithful. Visit us at our original 1915 location at 711 North University or online at mosportshops.com.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
Hi, this is Seth from MGoBlog. So we bought our home through a local bank. Family friend was the banker, but the underwriter was just a nightmare. So we went to refinance. I talked to Matt. It was so different. He shops the loan to different underwriters, so we were a priority for them. And he knows what they needed from us ahead of time, so we didn't have to keep digging through our old paperwork. He's incredibly ethical. He knows the system. He knows where they take advantage. And he keeps a small shop, and he does all the work himself, so he keeps all the costs down. Anyway, that's why I highly recommend Matt. He's licensed in Michigan, Ohio, and Florida. You can give him a call at 734-531-9950. Visit his new office in Ann Arbor on State Street, or go to homesurelending.com/mgoblog, and he'll take care of you. That's Homesure Lending, NMLS number 1161358.
I was dressed in embarrassment. I was dressed in wine. Morning dress. If it ever made a mess, I'll do anything for you.
The first thing I wrote down was Taco, Taco Man.
I have no response to that.
He's good.
He's really good.
So this was a game where he was rampant in the second half. Michigan was tackling for loss on almost every first down run, and he was a major part of that. And he's tweeting out that finally his ankle feels 100%. So, like,
it looked like it.
Good.
Because he was even making plays in the backfield where he was. I mean, he had 2.5 tackles for loss, but he was responsible for, I think, much more than that. Indiana had a couple zone stretches where he really set the edge.
Yes.
And forced plays back into Ryan Glasgow and Maurice Hurst and the rest of the defense, let the linebackers get to the ball. And then he also did a great job when they were going away from him. He was flowing down the line and getting tackles at the line of scrimmage that are just tough for most defensive ends to get to.
Yeah, and so they ran a lot of stretch in this game, which they were obviously going to do because they got so much on Michigan last year.
Yes.
And except for like a couple of times where Michigan got creased and gave up 5, 6, 7, 8 yards, Michigan shut it down and often put Indiana behind the sticks.
Turns out it's nice to have Ryan Glasgow in there against Indiana.
It is. And also it's nice that Indiana has a couple of really bad offensive linemen.
That also helps.
So I in the preview, I predicted that this would be like the Maryland game where most things up the middle just got crushed, but they got some stuff on the edge. And they didn't really get much out on the edge. So.
No, I mean, a couple plays where they edged Michigan, but not, I mean, considering the number of times that they ran out there,
yeah,
that was a win for Michigan.
And, you know, part of that is the fact that they don't have a Lorenzo Harrison in their backfield. But, you know, this is a spread team, and they gave it their best and just didn't happen. So we saw a couple of vintage dribble peppers in space against anybody, really.
Yeah.
And this time it was Xander Diamant and Richard Lego once. And it's like, well.
Yeah, Lego got suplexed.
Yeah. I was worried that was going to be a penalty because I think suplexing a guy is a penalty.
Yeah.
But they let it go.
Got away with it.
Yeah.
That was a strangely called series by Indiana, I thought, to run it 3 straight times at Michigan in the red zone.
Well, I mean.
Or inside the 10.
I mean, yeah, but they could throw and then, like, what's
that? Wasn't
I mean,
going so well either, but.
No.
Yeah, I mean, Michigan's defense is really good. I just thought that was, like, not giving themselves a chance to even score a touchdown there.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. When you're going up against this defense, I can't even. What are you supposed to do? So they did have, you know, a couple of drives. One was this ridiculous, insane catch, one of which should have been easily overturned.
Like, yeah, the first one, I don't know about easily overturned, but every angle I saw,
was
like you could tell that the ball was like probably hitting the ground. There wasn't necessarily one true definitive angle, but for them to confirm that call was ludicrous.
Dude, I mean, Stripling gets up and he's like, no, 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 because he's there.
Yeah,
he saw it.
Yeah.
And I couldn't.
But I mean, the officials in the booth can't overturn a call based on the defensive back reacting like the ball clear.
Well, no, but like I was informed by that Stribling saw the ball hit the ground, and then I've seen a replay. The ball hit the ground.
Yeah, it did. Ugh.
But anyway, after that, they had a really nice play from Mitchell Page on the sideline that just tip your hat to the offense.
Nicely done.
And then a wheel route against Demonte Thomas goes like under his hip.
Yeah, that was a weird one.
And there's nothing that Demonte Thomas can do because he's still catching up to the wheel route. And 80 to 90% of balls that are that short are hitting his back. And it just happened to squeeze through the one area.
That was like a Mitch Leidner throw.
Yes, yes, precisely. Precisely. So we got Mitch Leidner on that one. And a little Mitch Leidner on the first one, too, to be honest.
Yeah.
And that was most of their passing game the whole day.
Yeah.
So
I thought the defensive backs did a great job. And Stripling had a really nice game. They were trying to pick on him repeatedly.
Yeah, he gave up the one catch when they were stuck on their goal line. But other than that, I thought he was real good. There was the very odd play where the ball's so short, like both the receiver and Stribling go up for it, and then it falls like 5 yards inside of them.
Yeah, like they both totally missed time to jump. And well, no, it was just weird.
They just totally misjudged it. I don't know if it was the wind. It was probably the wind.
Yeah, there was a pretty strong
wind. I bet there was a gust of wind that just knocked that ball down because it was...
Yeah, that looked bizarre.
Yeah, it was just complete. Like, I was like, all right, Stribling's going to intercept that.
Okay.
It's not like the wide receiver judged it any better either. It was just.
No.
Like,
Just a weird play.
Playing a lot of weird plays.
Sure are.
Gideon had an incident where he covered a wheel route very well. So that's good.
Two thumbs up for that.
Michigan got hit when IU did a pin and pull a few times at Peppers.
Mm-hmm.
So Peppers is in that Sam position, and they're going to try to put a hat on him and blow it out. They did it the first time, but after that, Peppers was really good about setting the edge and letting other guys flow to hit it. So that was a nice adjustment after, giving up one kind of chunk play. And Michigan did well against the Manatee package.
Yes, they did, and to the point where Indiana really didn't utilize it too much.
Well, they brought it out like in the third or fourth quarter, and they just had some more stuff with it that they wanted to run, and that didn't go well, and they kind of put it away.
Yeah, there was one Xander Diamont pass attempt that was bad.
That spot was crazy. Oh, you're talking about the actual pass attempt.
I'm talking about the actual pass attempt.
So he got sacked, or I don't know if it was a sack or a tackle for loss, but Peppers got him, and it looked like that was going to be a 5 yard loss, and they mark it like a 1 yard loss. I'm like, dude.
Huh.
Dude.
Yeah.
Like, he was giving ground himself before Peppers made contact. But whatever. Whatever. You guys are bad.
Like, the Big Ten refs, man.
The review on the, like, the early fumble, so I'm just like, dude.
It's just wasting everything. I mean, what was going to happen with that review? They were going to overturn it and give Michigan the ball again in the same spot? Like, thanks for wasting all of our time.
Before
we get into more ref complaints, should shout out Demonte Thomas, who also had a very good game, I thought, and had like a really hard stick.
Yeah, and it wasn't targeting.
No.
Which was important.
That was. And he was making some good plays in run support. I mean, he got hit with the wheel route that was a Leidner throw, which happens.
Yeah, happens.
But I thought he had a really good all-around game.
Very, very solid tackling, both against the run and the pass. We saw a little bit of Tyree Cannell as well. And that did just look like they like Tyree Cannell enough to get him on the field for a couple series. So that is at least a very good sign for next year. I don't think it'll be much of an impact this year.
But, yeah.
And that was not like the dime package. It was just they're replacing Delano Hill with Tyree Cannell. So that's good.
McCray had a couple nice plays on the edge, which is encouraging after the last couple weeks.
We didn't see any of Devin Bush, which had been rumored. So
yeah.
Strike another rumor there.
Yeah.
But anyway, I asked these guys before the shoe, what was the last time that a Michigan defensive lineman drew a holding call?
We didn't have an answer to that.
We don't know. We cannot remember the last defensive lineman holding call in Michigan's favor. And look at this freaking defensive line, man.
It's insane. It's ridiculous. I assume this is the officials looking at the opposing offensive lines with pity.
Because I
have no other explanation for it.
But we see it every week. Like this, there was a horrendous missed hold on Sean Gary in this game.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, it's every week.
I don't know if they're just not calling it or what. Because I mean, if they did call all the holding against Michigan's defensive line, these games would not be games.
No.
But that's what you should get when you're awesome. That's what I think.
Agreed. Strongly.
Oh, man. Long season.
Yeah.
Long season. All right. Let's take one more break. Come back. Talk about the special teams and game theory bits.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
Hey, Ace, have you ever been in a car accident?
I have not.
You have to have been in a car accident for the purposes of this ad.
I apologize for not being in a car accident.
No, say you've been in a car accident.
I've been in a car accident.
Now, what happened to your insurance rates?
They were skyrocketed through the roof.
Thank you. This is a professional podcast.
This is a very professional podcast.
Well, if you are in a car accident and your rates have skyrocketed, the state of Michigan actually allows you to avoid this by taking a defensive driver's class. And Defensive Drivers Group will provide that to you at a low cost. At DefensiveDriversGroup.com, take their online course, complete it as 99% of their applicants do, and get the states of Michigan, California, and New Jersey to wipe your record clean. There are no hidden fees, and the founders, who are both Michigan grads, will give you $5 off for mentioning this ad. Just say MGO Blog. Ace, I wish to speak to you now of Andrew.
Andrew is a good worker. He would be a better worker if you let him work in silence.
But each day he felt the blackness, so he started his own bookkeeping company.
That does not sound like working.
Now he serves small and mid-sized consulting firms and nonprofits across the country, providing bookkeeping and accounting services.
Andrew DeGracias is a seasoned Big Four strategy consultant. He should work for the blackness.
But Ace, he'll keep us from missing deadlines and personally handle onerous tasks like editing and formatting our forms and finalizing documents, research, or analysis. If we did consulting work, he could help us with those deliverables.
But Brian, we do our work in silence.
No.
Getting the spirit in the dark. I'm getting the spirit in the dark. Keep on moving. Oh, you're grooving. Just getting the spirit in the dark.
So, man, this punter was
not good.
Something else.
Just so. King of the line drive. Like the low roller.
Just his form looks weird. He's wearing 86, right? I'm just like,
and it looks like a wide receiver out there.
He
trying
looks
to poke
like a
wall.
Wide receiver. I he's probably a literal wide receiver who they just have punting the ball. That's the only explanation that is possible for that dude.
He was averaging 36 yards a punt, and like half of that was off the bounce.
And God.
7 punts and only one goes inside the 20.
And Michigan jumps off sides on like 4th and 18 on the one punt that he puts directly in Peppers' chest. And I'm like, ugh.
There was another that Peppers caught on the run that was a fun time.
Yeah, that was like one of those where he breaks one more tackle and he's gone.
Yeah.
But what are you going to do? Michigan blocked another 2 punts in this game, which brings their season total to 7.
Which is insane.
One of our users, after the first spate of block punts, said that maybe Michigan wasn't running the spread punt because they think that they had downloaded it and figured it out.
I think they might have done that.
I think they did. Because 7 in a season is the most that I've ever seen.
Yeah, this is some Beamer ball stuff right here.
Yeah, there was the one... the one year where Marquise Walker got like 4.
Yeah.
And that is the only time that Michigan has impact block units in their history.
And now, I mean,
Michael
Jokes has multiple blocked punts this season now.
Yeah, man. It's crazy.
Khalik Hudson got in there for
one. Yeah, Khalik Hudson has his second of the season. And so, the, you know, the 20-10 score with both teams with under 300 yards of total offense, a lot of that had to do with special teams. Because Kenny Allen was bombing his punts versus
he was
this dude.
Four
this Indiana guy.
Four of his six punts pinned Indiana inside their own 20, which in this game was huge.
Mm-hmm. And
confidently kicked both of his field goals. Short ones, but still. And I think we're still at the point where that is a pleasant sight.
I mean, 10 in a row is 10 in a row. I don't care how long they are. And then you have like the Peppers run up punt return, which really helped. And Peppers was able to at least field some of them.
Yeah, I mean, he saved a decent chunk of yardage by grabbing those rollers.
Yeah, and so I just can't get over this freaking punter.
Like, it's not good.
No.
It's not good at all.
No, he's probably the worst punter I've seen since the Delaware State game.
There might have been a Northwestern punter in the interim who was pretty darn... Oh, Maryland's punting last year. Maryland had disastrous punting. They were switching punters. They were so bad.
So
and
yeah.
This still might have been worse, to be honest.
I think it was.
This is bad.
It was bad. It was.
I just don't think Indiana had a backup punter to go to.
No, because
if that's their starter, then good God.
They're already playing a wide receiver there. Yeah. Their backup punter is probably the long snapper, which poses some issues. I can't believe their long snapping was so good. Anyway. So game theory stuff. There's been a lot of complaints about the Lloyd Ballish decisions Michigan has made in this game.
Yeah.
I didn't like the 4th-and-4 punt from the 36 real early, but that was before I realized how Michigan's offense was going to look in this game.
Where John O'Korn was just not a threat?
Yes. So maybe Michigan knew that, and they were just going to...
It did seem like a game where they were calling it with the knowledge that their quarterback was very limited.
Yeah. They went for it on 4th-and-2 later in the game in a similar situation and got that. They punted on 4th-and-2 from the Michigan 45, which is like, but and given the way this game was developing, you can't really criticize it. As I always say in these situations, when you're playing a game from the 1950s, you can make 1950s decisions. And who boy was this a game from the 1950s?
Right down to the snow.
To the point where they got 4th-and-3 on the Indiana 35. They're up 20-10. And I'm like, you just punt it. And it went in the end zone. I did not care.
It was fine.
It was fine. Just
net
just
of
get
15.
The ball away.
Who cares?
Yep. Just don't even bother with it. And then the other interesting thing was Michigan's final drive. They've already burned the clock down to about a minute. They face a 4th-and-18 and about midfield ish.
Just like run it.
And they're just like, yeah, we're just going to run off tackle, see what happens. And I was like, yep.
Do that.
Do that because, as mentioned, Michigan Stadium was an enormous snow globe.
Yeah. Yeah. Indiana's attempts to throw. On the ensuing drive were comical.
Yeah, they took the sack and they were just like, all right, let's go home.
Lego fumbles and then they're just like, all right,
yeah, we're done.
Let's pack it up.
Let's go beat Purdue.
I want to be warm.
Yeah, it was amazing. I've never seen a game like quite end like that where you're down 10 points, you get a sack, and they're just like,
it's like an entire sideline just like shruggy.
Yeah.
All right. So much for that.
Yeah. If only Michigan State wasn't going to send a mental message. And mental message. Speaking of Michigan State, man, we have to talk about this two-point decision. So Michigan State scores 17-16. There's 4.5 minutes left.
In a game where Ohio State has not been able to move the ball much at all.
No. I mean, that's the thing.
JT Barrett can't throw in this
game. No, he's got like 88 yards passing.
He's got more yards rushing than passing.
Yeah, and like, I know that you're 3-7, but if you look at the context of this game, one, if you do get it, you change what Ohio State is going to do, and you're up one. So a field goal beats you.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Yeah, also, two, Tyler O'Connor sucks.
and
They'd scored on that drive by running the ball 8 straight times with LJ Scott.
Right.
That is how they scored. And then on the 2-point conversion, I mean, I get you can't line up, you probably can't line up and just run LJ Scott. But to put the ball
but
in Tyler O'Connor's...
But you probably should, anyway.
It's a better bet than putting the ball in Tyler O'Connor's hands, and he, you know, throws a pick.
Yeah.
Which, of course that happens.
Yeah. So I took a lot of stick in when I did the Michigan State preview, saying that LJ Scott was the best back Michigan has faced all year by some distance.
I mean, you did forget about Saquon Barkley.
I did forget about Saquon Barkley, but...
LJ Scott's really darn good.
I think he's better than Barkley.
I disagree, but it's close.
Yeah.
It's closer than I thought it was.
I'd take him over Barkley, but he had consecutive games with 3 carries.
That's close as D'Antonio's going to come to suspending a guy. So,
well, there's a that more than anything is indicative of a locker room that's kind of falling apart. Speaking of Malik McDowell,
I'm sure he had a fun time watching that one from the sideline.
He did with his ankle injury. Man, that Indiana punter. That guy was like stand-up comedy.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I mean, it just looked like somebody who had never punted before getting thrown out there and being asked to punt.
Yeah, except he's punted like 50 times this year.
Well,
I'm a little bit disappointed because like the vicious Pro Football Focus kicker grading was totally appropriate.
Yep, this one is like, all right, I get it. Like minus 22 or whatever. Yeah. If anything, that seemed generous given their grading of other punters.
Yeah, I mean, what does Kenny Allen have to do to not get a negative? If Seriously. That guy is just negative 22.
Yeah, he should be like negative 60 based on what I've seen on everything else this year. But
apparently, one of the Pro Football Focus guys listened to our podcast. And it was related to me that the guy who grades the kickers, his parents were not murdered by a punter.
They passed a line. It's not a Batman situation.
Yes, it's not a Batman situation. which just makes all of this more confusing,
yeah,
really.
I mean, whatever the curve is here is harsh. It's real harsh.
All right. Let's take one more break. We're going to come back, talk some basketball.
As Jim Harbaugh and the 2016 Michigan Wolverines begin their journey towards a 43rd Big Ten championship and 12th national title, it's important that you're also preparing for this historic season. If you find yourself on the wrong side of the law, in Ann Arbor or around Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man in the huddle. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com.
Everyone has their own definition of true wealth, and it's our job to help them understand what the definition is for them. We look at everything from college to retirement and lifestyle planning, as far as estate planning and building their own legacy, helping them understand what their goals are, and then backing in from there.
Peak Wealth Management founder Nick Hopwood has been a part of the MGO blog community from almost the very beginning. If you've put in the work to reach that point in your career, it's probably time to talk to him about your financial future. Stop by his office in Plymouth or visit peakwm.com/MGOblog.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom-printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
I feel like I have a lot of work to do. Still, you know, I'm a student of the drums. And I'm also a teacher of the drums, too.
So if I told you that someone had 6 points and 4 rebounds and was the best player of the game, how would you react?
Like I was on Theraflu and had a fever dream and this whole weekend was just some weird hallucination?
I'm going to say that you were on Theraflu and it might be a hallucination, but I saw it too.
This concerns me.
You think it's contagious?
I mean, something's going on.
So DJ Wilson, man.
He's awesome.
Crazy.
He's really awesome. I mean, that lineup change, I expected it to happen closer to Big Ten season. Beeline pulled the trigger on it early.
Well, how can you not?
I mean, clearly with what we saw, he changes the complexion of the team on both ends of the floor, but especially on defense.
There was an incident in the SMU game where Michigan, like the center is out. He's up the court for some whatever reason, and there's a guy driving to the basket. I'm like, all right, well, that's a dunk. And then DJ Wilson shows up and like doesn't block the shot, but alters it so badly that the guy barely grazes rim. And I was like, I could get used to this.
You know, because he's got the rim protection. And there was also a play in that SMU game where he's rotating around and ends up closing out on three different players.
This is the Denal charge. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. And the third guy, he charges him. He closes out, gets him to come off the three-point line, takes a wild drive. Denal draws the charge. And that was one of the best individual defensive plays I've seen since Jordan Morgan, probably. Well, I mean, I don't remember anybody doing something like that for Michigan.
A DJ Wilson closeout is a serious closeout.
Yeah, I mean, because we've seen, you know, guys attempt to shoot up threes, and all of a sudden they have to go full rainbow mode just to get it over him. There was a comical SMU attempt earlier in the game where Wilson closes out on a guard who's already too deep into his shooting form to abort it. And he just ends up like pop fly style trying to get it up. And I think it might have barely grazed the rim, but it was an ugly miss. And Wilson just totally changes what Michigan could do on that end. Also, I mean, the whole tournament, they're talking about how Michigan is this huge team and they're right. And how Michigan is this really good defensive team. And so far, they're right. I'm going to believe that Michigan is a really good defensive team all year when it plays out. It's like getting commits from the state of Mississippi.
Correct. Exactly correct.
But they're 33rd in the country right now in adjusted defensive efficiency on KenPom.
And that's a lot. That's still a lot of projection there, right? So
yes,
to go up from where they were last year to be 33rd now with KenPom expecting a continuation of what happened last year. That's good.
Because the offense, their rating hasn't budged too much. It's around 10th. It is 10th. Yeah. It has been around 10th all year. But the defense has driven Michigan moving up from 31st in the overall rankings, and they're all the way up to 15th after that win over SMU.
Yeah, because they were projected about the same strength as Michigan. So was Marquette, and Michigan just laid waste to both those teams.
Yes, because they had actually fallen a bit because they did not beat Howard or IUPUI by as much as they were expected to.
Yeah.
And then they ran both of those teams off the floor, and those are two good teams.
Well, the most impressive thing for me with DJ Wilson is that he's able to contest without fouling so well. Like, he has a certain Ben Wallace aspect to his game.
Yes.
Where when Ben Wallace went from the Pistons to the Bulls, the rebounding of both teams didn't change at all.
Yeah.
What happened is that the replacements for Ben Wallace fouled a ton more and altered fewer shots. So the ability of DJ Wilson to turn good shots into bad shots without putting the opposition on the line is just kind of freaky.
Yeah, his block rate is almost 9% right now, and I don't think that even comes close to encapsulating how many shots he affects.
Yeah.
And also, Michigan's rebounding has totally changed with him on the floor, too. He's pulling down a hair under 30% of opponent misses right now on the defensive end of the floor.
So there is like a dark lining to the silver cloud, and that is we no longer have Derek Walton rebounding like a center.
No, he's down at 11% all of a sudden. But that is also allowing Michigan to, I mean, that lets Walton get up the floor, let Michigan get out in transition. And with the way that Wilson runs the floor so well, and so does Wagner. Donnell does a pretty good job of getting up the floor. They've gotten some really easy buckets in transition because these bigs are able to rebound, turn, get the outlet, and go. And they've gotten some pretty spectacular finishes on the other end because they don't have to send that many guys to the glass.
Yeah.
And they can turn that into instant offense and get some, even if they're not getting straight up fast break dunks or layups or anything like that, they're able to get some early clock attempts where the defense hasn't been set yet. And a lot of that's because of what they're able to do on the other end.
And you have a diversity of scoring from this team. Michigan beats Marquette easily without a single point from a point guard.
And then Walton goes off against SMU for the best scoring, for the best 3-point shooting game of his life.
The dude's already like 6 of 10 or something. And some guy's like, take one.
Yeah, when he just jabs steps, and then the guy's like, okay.
Yeah. So he
put it up.
He shot it. It was good. Yeah. I don't think I need to tell anybody watching this. It went in.
Yeah, and I mean, Irvin, I think, has had a really nice start to this year that he's going to drive you nuts a little bit with his shot selection.
Yeah.
But I like it. That mid-range game that he's got going opens up a lot for him. He had a couple
swooping
very
layups.
Open layups where guys were respecting the mid-range shot too much, but they have to do that against him because if he pulls up from there, that is his sweet spot.
Mm-hmm.
Right around the free throw line, curling off a screen, he's been money from that area. And that's something where if he curls off that and then just keeps going, he's able to get that extra step. And that's something that he kind of needs because he's not this explosive athlete who's going to dunk on somebody at the rim. So when he kind of gets that extra step, can do like the spike layup where he's scooping up underneath. He needs that threat of the mid-range to be able to get that going, but we saw how much that helps.
Ace, I hate your persuasive argument in favor of long twos.
I'm sorry, but it's happening.
I mean, it's persuasive, but I hate it all the same.
I understand it. I know we've got long twos at the devil's work as a tag on our website, but we might have to rethink that stance.
Well, long twos are okay as long as they facilitate other higher percentage shots.
That's not a real catchy tag.
They can't all be. We got some stinkers.
We do.
Most of them start with I.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But I think the other big thing from that has held through this tournament, that through the first two games, it was an encouraging sign, but something that we were very much in wait-and-see mode about, is Mark Donnell has been good.
I mean,
and, there are still some Mark Donnell-like issues.
Yeah.
But I think he has played at a level well above what we expected.
Yeah. I'm still very much on the Mo Wagner express here.
Same here. I still think he is the superior player, especially as he continues to work out some of the...
fouling issues.
I mean, not even as much fouling issues, but some of the mistakes he makes on offense where he'll get a little excited, turn the ball over.
Mm. Well, I mean,
and his defensive positioning, that's the main thing that Beilein has said, is the main reason why he's pulling Wagner out and putting Donnell in. It's not as much the fouling stuff as sometimes his positioning just isn't as good as Donnell.
There's a really big dichotomy between Mark Donnell as an on-ball defender and as a help defender.
Yeah.
As an on-ball defender, not good.
No.
As a help defender, and you saw the charges he took. He took back-to-back charges against SMU. And he gets a healthy number of blocks as a help defender. So, as long as the guy he's checking is not a huge offensive threat, I think he can definitely be an asset on both ends of the floor. It's just when you actually get a center who's going to post him up, that doesn't go well.
No.
that's not a strength.
No. But I think as a backup center, he has showed that he could be maybe even above average in that regard, and that is ahead of expectations.
And then, Rockman isn't doing a ton, but in the SMU game, twice they've ended up in late clock situations and they just gave it to him for an ISO. And he got to the rack both times and scored. So
yeah, that is his strength. I think his shot selection has been iffy. I've actually been a little disappointed in his defense too. But I expect that to bounce back. And in the meantime, he's got that thing. And between him and Irvin with those mid-range shots, that's two pretty reliable late clock options that you have there that give you different looks. And I mean, you need that. Not every possession is going to go smoothly.
Yeah.
So you need late clock shot makers. And Walton, with his ability to just kind of pull up and shoot the three too, you've got a few different options there in end of clock situations. And that's something that Michigan had some trouble finding last year. I mean, they didn't really have that until late in the season with Irvin starting to get that mid-range game going. This year, it looks like they're a lot more comfortable when they get down in that late clock. Just give the ball to Rock or run Irvin off the high screen and see what happens. And that's important for keeping the offense going.
And John Teske is a large man.
He is enormous. I mean, he had one of those. He didn't get credit with a block, but he sure affected a shot at the rim. And then drew a foul on the other end off a pick and roll and sunk both free throws. He's got a nice shooting stroke. He's got a really nice shooting stroke. So we'll see how much he ends up getting worked in, but he's somebody who could end up, as the season moves along, I mean, you can't, there's no,
I mean, you need a third center because there's going to be times when you just end up in a ton of foul trouble.
Yeah, and we saw, I mean, in the SMU game, Wagner got hit with a crap second foul call. Sometimes you're going to be in situations like that where the officials are calling a game a certain way. I was glad that...
Badly.
Yes. It was nice to see that Beilein already has the confidence to put Teske in the first half against a good team. Even though the game was going well for Michigan, that's a situation where, you know, if he's not as confident in that guy, maybe you're rolling the dice a little bit more with centers in foul trouble. It was good to see Teske in there and hold his own against a team that's pretty big. I mean,
and, you know, let's talk about the roster composition right here. Like, everybody was super mad when they took Austin Davis because it was like, you got too many bigs. And I'm just like, well, given the way Michigan is, we're going to recruit these bigs. They're going to be like DJ Wilson. They're going to be like Mark Denal. They're going to be guys who aren't going to be impact players.
Yeah.
So don't you kind of want to have like a guy in the pipeline pretty consistently?
Oh, absolutely. No, I think this roster composition, and now you see the kind of the lineup flexibility that you have now where DJ Wilson's a four.
Yep.
I mean, and Michigan Michigan took Mo Wagner as a wing, you know? I mean, the roster composition, I mean, that's the thing with taking, when you're recruiting 18-year-olds, 16-year-olds, 17-year-olds, these guys grow at rates that you can't entirely predict.
Yep.
And so sometimes you got to take a bunch of tallish dudes and see how it shakes out. Some people expected Wilson to be a five. He's better suited as a four.
Yep.
Some people were suggesting he'd be a three, and he's Michigan's best center.
Yep.
So sometimes you got to just go with it. But in terms of taking these absolute trees like Teske and Davis, I'm in full support of that.
Yeah. I mean, these guys are big, big dudes. And that's something that.
Teske might be underlisted at 7 feet. That dude is enormous.
He is very enormous. Did you see that picture of.
Yes, it was Xavier Simpson.
He's not
tall. Barely getting his head in the frame. It's a quality comment.
He looked like an impertinent 6-year-old.
Hey, guys. What's going on? You hear me up there?
No, we cannot. This is how we talk.
But Michigan's now able to throw out lineups where Zach Irvin's the two.
Yep.
At 6'6", and you got Duncan Robinson at 6'8", playing the three.
And the best rebounding point guard in America.
I mean, that's, and then they've got the flexibility to go in the other direction, too.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to see that, though.
No, I mean, it's not their best lineup.
No.
But you can have lineups where you have, I mean, you could even have a two-point lineup with Irvin at the four. He's played it before. I mean, they've got a crazy amount of lineup flexibility all of a sudden.
Yeah. And now that they're bringing Duncan Robinson off the bench as like the microwave.
And that's the role that he is perfectly suited for, especially since that allows Beilein to pick Robinson's defensive matchup. And that mitigates his biggest issue, which is he's not a good defender.
Yeah, well, he's improved.
He's getting better at it, but still, especially when you're comparing him to DJ Wilson, the drop off there is considerable.
Yes.
And being able to pick his best spot, both in terms of who he's going up against on offense and who he's guarding on defense, and letting him just hunt shots, that is his role. And that's something that is, if you were asking me heading into the season, what is the ideal way for this whole thing to play out, this is it.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't expect it to happen this quickly.
No, I mean, getting DJ Wilson essentially out of nowhere to becoming an impact player. And my favorite kind of impact player, and that is an impact player without the ball.
Yes.
Because then you can have impact players with the ball. It just changes the outlook for this entire program, because he's a sophomore.
Yes.
And he's not the kind of guy who's going to go to the NBA next year, because he's got a lot of work on.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is a big deal for not only this year, but for the next couple.
No, this was as exciting a development as you could have possibly had.
Pretty freaking good.
Yeah.
What seed? Give me a seed.
I'd say top four at this point.
Top four. That's not detailed enough.
I will say a four seed.
A four seed. It says ace. I'm going to go three.
I like it.
and I think the most important thing here is that for the second time in his tenure at Michigan, John Beilein has started over from scratch, looked at what was wrong with what he was doing, and changed his programming almost completely. So the first time, you know, with Darius Morris, he went to that heavy pick and roll. Got Michigan to the tournament, got Michigan to the title game. And then the defense falls off a cliff, and he's like, I got to do something about this. He brings in Billy Donlin. That was a stroke of luck.
Oh, yeah. Props to Wright State's athletic director for being a moron.
People are just in charge of things for no reason.
But, I mean, you look at Michigan's foul rate, which is not super low anymore.
Yeah.
It was actually much higher heading into the SMU game, and they actually did a pretty good job of foul avoidance in that game. But they're right around average right now, which for Michigan is an enormous change.
Yeah.
And they're able to do that. They've definitely made a concerted effort to hack more at the rim when opposing teams would otherwise get easy layups. And their centers are still staying out of foul trouble for the most part because they aren't doing that stupid hard hedge against the high screen and roll. And so they're trading off those ticky-tack fouls 35 feet away from the basket, which don't do anything for you,
mm-hmm.
for fouling guys who are about to get 2 points.
And sometimes you actually get blocks on those.
Yes.
Too,
so. Yeah, I mean, you know, you're giving your guys more freedom to go up and contest shots. They're in less foul trouble to begin with, so they're more comfortable doing that. It's an enormous change.
The
rotations have been clean for the most part. I've been impressed by how well they've taken to this new defense so quickly. Having Wilson out there allows them to switch pretty much everything.
And I think that's the biggest change. Wilson is not much of an offensive threat. He can shoot a little bit, but he's obviously not got the green light.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not making shots himself. When he gets the ball, he's usually just passing it back to the point guard. He's not posting up. He's just kind of out there on offense, being a cleanup guy, offensive rebounds, dunks, that kind of thing. But he's an impact defensive player, the likes of which we have not seen under John Beilein at Michigan.
Yeah, I mean, he can...
The philosophical leap to go from I'm John Beilein to DJ Wilson is my four is something I don't know if many coaches are capable of.
No, I mean, Beilein's willingness to cede power.
Mm-hmm.
To his assistants. I mean, for a guy who is
a control freak
as he is, a control freak like he is, and you see it with Donlin. You know, Donlin will take over the huddle. We saw the thing in the preseason where Donlin ran a practice on his own.
Yeah,
that says a lot about John Beilein as a head coach that he's willing to do that, and that is why he has been so successful, and that is going to pay off enormously this year.
They brought out the 1-3-1 briefly against SMU too, which is
good. And it worked because, I mean, when you look at it, and you're trying to look for a passing lane there.
With DJ Wilson on one of the wings.
I mean, my goodness.
I think they should put him out top.
You know, that would be fun to see. Yeah. I would like to see that.
But excellent outlook for basketball this season, which is something I don't know if we thought. Like, we thought they'd be a tourney team. But
yeah,
this looks
I thought they were better than what people were thinking heading into the season, mostly because of the continuity.
Yeah.
And kind of with the rest of the Big Ten looking uncertain.
Yes. Well, Indiana looks very good.
Indiana looks quite good. And I expect Wisconsin and Michigan State to be good by the end of the year.
I don't know about Michigan State,
We'll see with Michigan State, but
Izzo
teams early in the season, we've seen this before.
But they're starting a 6-6 walk-on at center.
That's true. But
like,
I'm still just, it's an Izzo team.
I know.
They play really tough teams early in the year. I'm not going to judge them by what they do against the Kentuckys of the world.
Well, Arizona's not that good.
But Arizona's not good. That's true.
They got hammered by Kentucky.
And I'm optimistic about that matchup with Michigan right now.
How about that?
Because Michigan is going to push them around, baby.
Wow.
Yeah.
Quite a turn of events.
It really is.
All right. We're going to take one more break, come back, talk to Jamie.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
In 1934, a salesman from Champion Sportswear walked into Moe's Sports Shop. There, he teamed up with George J. Moe to create the very first University of Michigan-branded shirt. After seeing the high demand for this product, Champion went to the other Big Ten schools with the same proposal, and the collegiate apparel industry was born. Moe's Sports Shops is celebrating 100 years of outfitting the Michigan faithful. Visit us at our original 1915 location at 711 North University, or online at 100years.mo. That's 100years.moe. In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though.
Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across Southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
Welcome in, Jamie Mack at JustCoverBlog.com. How you doing, Jamie?
I'm doing great, guys. I am still thawing out the morning after the Michigan-Indiana game.
Have you ever been in a situation where the entire stadium turned into a snow globe?
No. Not as a fan. I know you don't like, old football stories, but I did play in a snow game in high school in Patrick Henry, which is about an hour south of Toledo. I've never seen that at Michigan Stadium. That was impressive. And I thought that, it was just so fun that fourth quarter, especially once Michigan got up 20-10, the crowd really got into it. What we sang, Let It Snow. Then there was a Beat Ohio chant, like amidst the blizzard, which that was crazy. But no, I've not been to too many games where that's happened.
That was kind of a introduction to a weird weekend in the Big Ten where high winds and iffy weather resulted in a lot of ugly, ugly games. We're going to concentrate on the ugly game that is most relevant to Michigan off the bat. That would be Ohio State 17, Michigan State 16. And the thing with JT Barrett is if it's a bad weather game, he cannot throw. 10 of 22 for 3.9 yards an attempt in this game. He rushes 24 times against a 3-7 team the week before Michigan. Curtis Samuel only had 8 touches, and Mike Weber had a big run and ended up with 8 yards of carry, but they barely squeezed by Michigan State, get outgained, largely because LJ Scott went off.
Yeah, going back to the top there with Barrett and the weather, he sailed a couple passes that were just basic throws into the flat where, he just hits it on the numbers. You've got Samuel in space there. He sailed a couple, and then he threw a couple more in the dirt, I think, to maybe overcompensate that later in the game. You were talking about Weber and Samuel. They are such a 1-2 punch. They averaged 7.5 yards per play when either of them touched the ball yesterday, only 3.2 yards on the other 45 plays without them. And as I see it, if Michigan can just keep the Mike Weber 52-yard run that we saw yesterday off the board or the 74-yard Curtis Samuel run off the board that we saw against Penn State, I think they've got a real good job of keeping this Ohio State offense in clunky form for 4 whole quarters.
And I got to see the entire first half of this game before I went into the game, and it felt a lot like the Michigan game where Michigan State comes out and you want them to make the entire plane out of the game script.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they run two just beautifully designed plays to start off the game and get that the misdirection screen to Scott for the touchdown to start it off, and then they bogged down because
they're Michigan
the script's
State.
Over.
Yeah.
But it did look
really
like Ohio State was susceptible.
They don't really have much else. They don't have any receivers that can create separation against that secondary. And O'Connor is not a very good or accurate quarterback, even under good circumstances. The wind was just the wind impacted him just as much as it impacted JP. He didn't. He was so off on so many of the passes, and they went with Damian Terry a couple possessions too in the middle of the game.
Well, they seemed convinced that if Damian Terry was in, Ohio State was going to freak out and just assume it was a run, and so they're throwing it deep with Damian Terry,
which doesn't go well because he's
Damian Terry.
They had an open pass.
The fatal flaw in that theory is like he still has to throw a 40-yard ball accurately, which is not going to happen. But then the end of this game is just, we talked about it a little bit in our Game 30 segment. Michigan State runs 8 consecutive times with L.J. Scott for a touchdown, who still only has 19 carries in this game, which is bonkers.
Yeah. 8 of them on that one, on that drive.
And so they score a touchdown just running L.J. Scott. And then they go for 2 with 4.5 minutes left, and they throw it with Tyler O'Connor, and he throws it to an Ohio State Buckeye, which is just like, what are you doing? So many what are you doings.
Yeah. Yep.
It was reminiscent of the 2013 Michigan-Ohio State game where the 2-point conversion was just so obvious Ohio State blew it up.
It was. And in that game, Ohio State saw what Michigan was aligning in and then called a timeout, and Michigan didn't change the play. So...
you know, on that drive where L.J. Scott had all those carries, you know, not to be overlooked, was Prescott Line just destroyed some Ohio State defenders on a lead blocker. That was kind of fun to see, you know, considering Michigan likes fullbacks.
Yeah, Prescott Line is one of the weirdest stories in the Big Ten because he's like a fullback who transferred from TCU. He's kind of like the Derek Green exchange, except he got sent to the wrong school.
Right.
So... But Ohio State looks vulnerable in this game. They can't really move the ball effectively. They get the occasional play, but this doesn't look like the death machine that it did midseason. And
they had 12 drives yesterday. They only scored on 3 of them.
That's something, man.
And contrast that to Michigan. I should have looked up these numbers, especially since I'm going to bring it up. But you know, Michigan put up 30 points on Michigan State. They had to settle for some field goals, but they scored on a majority of their drives, if I recall.
They did, and then they kind of shut it down in the fourth quarter because that was the right move. That was a very much a game theory-based fall-off in the offense. Mm-hmm. And kind of the thing that stood out to me is Ross Fulton, who is, of course, our go-to smart Buckeye fan for analysis, mentioned that Michigan State didn't run quarters basically at all. So they were blitzing safeties a lot and bringing guys down to run a cover 3 or cover 2. Mm-hmm. So that sounds actually not too distant from what Don Brown wants it.
No,
not at all. I mean, and it worked. You know, they set the tone with 3 first half sacks, Michigan State did. And, you know, they only had 7 sacks coming into the game. And I saw a stat yesterday that last year they had 8 games where they had 3 or more sacks. This is the first time yesterday. And even when they weren't getting home, they were getting in JT's grill. I remember one play in the first half where he had the guy open in the end zone, you know, but Bola was coming right at him and JT couldn't step in his throw. He had to throw it early and it actually went through the uprights, the pass did almost, as opposed to, you know, having time and hitting the open wide receiver.
And that's MSU getting that rush without Malik McDowell in the lineup.
Yeah.
Good point. Yeah.
So they had they couldn't block Penn State, and then they had a number of games where their pass protection was really good, and they kind of came back down to earth, or not even that level in this game. And that mm-hmm. would seem to bode well for Michigan's defensive line.
Yeah, I would agree. It looked like the right side of their line, too, was having problems yesterday. That Price kid, you know, had such a bad game against Penn State. You know, I know he gave up a sack
on his
own volition, and then on another play you know, it was RPS Michigan State, you know, kind of on one of those loop stunts. And then two blockers went to go to one guy, and the Michigan State guy just had a clear shot at Barrett.
To be clear, I think you mean Prince, the right tackle, Price,
right.
The guard.
Right. Yeah. What did I say?
You said Price, who's the guard. But
oh, right. Oh, yeah. Easily confused. Wow, I actually got a name from the Ohio State line, too. That's crazy. What a weird mistake that was.
Yeah, that is crazy. All right.
Ohio State's just been so choppy in some of their tougher games, you know, this year. I look at the 5 games in the Big Ten where they lost one of them and they didn't cover the spread, you know, in the other 4. You know, against IU, 5 of their first 6 drives they couldn't score on, and then they had another stretch in the second half where they had 5 drives where it was just punts and turnovers. Wisconsin, only 2 field goals on their first 7 drives. We saw what happened against Penn State. They had 2 stretches in that Penn State game where they had 4 drives out of 5 without points, 5 straight punts against Northwestern. And as we said yesterday, 12 drives, only 3 they scored on, and they punted on 7 of them. And I don't think Well, Wisconsin obviously has a great team, but those other four defenses I don't think can hold a candle to Michigan.
No, they cannot.
Yeah.
So even if John O'Korn does play against Michigan and it's just an ugly slugfest, I could definitely see a repeat of this kind of Michigan State game where it's just.
I think we're rooting for bad weather, right?
Yes. There's no question about that. No question. All right, moving on to, good Lord.
Yeah, what even to move on to?
I guess Penn State 39, Rutgers 0. Because for some reason, Ace watched most of this game.
The reason was drugs, Brian.
Yours or Matt Millen's?
The combination of both, I think.
Yeah. What did he say?
He's just taking it like a big old walrus. I like it without the context better. With the context was that it was pouring rain there, and they cut to some Rutgers fan in the stands who just isn't wearing any rain gear at all, and he's just taking it like a big old walrus. He just was basking in the rain.
I like Matt Millen as a commentator, except when he's saying follow the fullback.
He started like randomly like reciting lyrics.
It's good. It's good.
He was off there. I mean, and it was the perfect game for that.
Yeah.
It was the perfect game to watch while on a bunch of cold medication when there was not actually a competitive game going on at night anyways, so might as well watch the one that's like a weird drug experience.
All right. We're going to play a game. The game is guess Rutgers total yardage. Ace?
140.
Okay. Jamie?
That's way over. I'm going to say 84.
87!
Good God!
Showcase Showdown.
I thought I was undershooting it.
You can never undershoot Rutgers total yardage.
they punted on their final 12 drives, and they only averaged 7.5 yards per drive on those.
God, final yardage was 549 to 87. That is unbelievable.
Yep. Do you think I was lying? Are you checking me?
It's one thing to hear, and it's another thing to just see the numbers on a page.
Well, the most interesting part of this game was when the Penn State students went into the Rutgers student section, which had been completely vacated. And then they got kicked out by cops.
The entire stadium was vacated.
Yes.
Nobody was there.
I had a good tweet about how there were more people at the Michigan satellite camp than Rutgers Penn State. It was a good tweet, and I liked it.
I like it. Good.
All right. I guess we're going to move on to... Oh, God.
There's just nothing. It's like this for every game.
It is Iowa 28, Illinois nothing.
Moving on.
Oh, man.
I mean, we got to talk about something.
No.
You realize in this game, the first 16 drives ended in either a punt or a turnover.
Oh, I know what we can talk about. Illinois didn't kick off.
That's right.
Illinois didn't kick off because Kirk Ferentz took the wind in the second half, which doesn't even make any sense because half the time you're not going to have the wind anyway.
Right.
That doesn't make any sense.
It just makes me so mad that he coached a decent game against Michigan.
Fuck that shit.
Asshole.
Speaking of, guess who got 26 carries and guess who got 13 carries?
I know. Deshaun Daniels actually had a decent game because Illinois is bad.
Yeah.
But, they flipped back from actually giving the ball to their best player to not doing that.
Yeah. But they still won 28-0 because Illinois. Wes Lunt came back.
It's
so
terrible.
That's what happened.
Okay, good for them.
I mean, I want Illinois to win because they have two really good fans on Twitter, like Illini and then Big Twin.
Yeah.
Those are good dudes, and they just have to sit there and just eat shit every year because of Illinois football. And
After writing like 60,000 word previews.
Yeah.
Those guys.
Yeah, those guys. Those guys deserve some loving.
Yeah.
Some loving and.
Hey-o.
Ho. Nailed it.
I agree. They don't even get to enjoy basketball season with Jim Gross. They don't even get to enjoy basketball season.
Well, that was the most like football hire that a Big Ten team has done in basketball in a long time. So you have a MAC school that has a good year, and then they have the upset in the tournament of Michigan, and they're just like, well, we're going to hire that guy. You don't have to do that.
No.
Not
you're that, Illinois.
No MAC hires, man. I guess we should move on because now we're talking about
Jim Groch.
Jim Groch. Wisconsin 49, Purdue 20. The most interesting thing about this game is that Wisconsin is still playing two quarterbacks. So Bart Houston had 6 attempts and Hornibrook, I forget his first name, had 9.
Alex.
They passed 15 times against Purdue.
And complete 12 of them.
Hooray. I don't know what to say here. It was a Wisconsin-Purdue game. It was a little weird at first because of the weather. That's all.
Yeah. I mean, I think I think everybody saw the best play of the game when Watt picked off the screen pass and ran it in, and that just kind of opened up the floodgates. Wisconsin's just sort of chugging along. You know, I mean, when you're playing Illinois and Purdue, you can get away with not just sub quarterback play, but sub quarterback play out of two guys.
Nebraska 28, Maryland 7. Riker Fife. This is quite
Riker
a stat
Fife,
line.
Baby. 1-0 is a start.
Riker Fife is 23 of 27.
37.
37. Oh, well, my sheet says 27. So this is going to be a much more impressive stat.
Yeah.
23 of 27 for 5.9 yards an attempt. Would have been really amazing.
Would have been incredible. But never mind. There are 10 more throws in there.
All right. Bortenschlager? Who's Bortenschlager?
I don't know. He's here. I didn't know that guy existed until I just pulled up the box score.
Where's Piggy?
Max Bortenschlager.
Where's Piggy?
True freshman from Indianapolis.
Bortenschlager.
Yeah, Caleb Rowe had an attempt in there too.
Piggy to the curb, apparently.
Where's Piggy?
Poor Piggy. Piggy had a carry.
Piggy doesn't even make an appearance to run. I can't believe they don't even throw him in there to run it.
He got one run, but it went for negative yards.
Oh, he did? Okay. All right.
Where's Piggy?
I don't know.
It's not Piggy time anymore, Brian.
It's not Piggy time. I hate it. Anyway.
Maryland had 207 yards of offense, and 92 of them came on a touchdown pass to DJ Moore early in the fourth quarter when they were already down 28-0.
All right, so DJ's got some work ahead of him.
Yep.
Yes.
Sorry, this is the only thing I can
Where's Piggy?
Minnesota 29, Northwestern 12. Minnesota kicks 5 field goals.
Ugh.
Mitch Leidner exists. That's all. God. Just why? Why is this? Why? Why the Big Ten?
Big Ten.
I don't know. I think the Big Ten would be so much better if a team like Indiana would stop shooting themselves in the foot and put up 8 wins, or if a team like Northwestern did the same, because those two teams seem really exciting and fun to watch. Whereas we have Minnesota, who's got 8 wins right now and can still play spoiler in this West race. You know, they're the team that ends up with the better record. I consistently don't understand how they win ball games. Yesterday, they won because Northwestern couldn't protect the passer. They had 5 drives ending in sacks yesterday, and on 11 third down pass attempts, they actually gained -1 yards. Northwestern.
Good God.
What happened to Austin Carr, man?
He can't do it on his own.
I don't know. He only had 5 catches for 60-some-odd yards yesterday.
Yeah. I don't know, man. What's going on?
Yeah, and then of course, Minnesota iced the game on a 6.5-minute drive when it was like 15-6. They put up one of their 5 field goals, I think, after that drive, and there's like no time left in the game practically, so...
Well, that was certainly an event that happened.
Yeah. And now Minnesota they play Wisconsin. That's if Wisconsin wins, they go. And if they lose, though, then it's Nebraska, if Nebraska beats Iowa.
I see. Yeah. Well, one of those teams is going to get hand blasted in the Big Ten championship game. I guess unless Penn State goes, that would be competitive. So never mind. So let's hope that doesn't happen.
Yes. Let's root for
that's,
that.
That's what we're doing.
That's a ticket.
Yeah.
Where's Piggy? All right, it's been good talking to you, Jamie. We'll talk to you next week, maybe.
Sounds good, guys. Happy Thanksgiving. Go Blue.
Yep.
Thank you for listening to the MGO podcast. I am A. Sandbender, along with Brian Cook. Where's Piggy? Where's Piggy?
Where's Piggy?
Better than playing a lot of weird plays.